Raw footage coming out of the cinema and into your ears.
35mm. Analog world. 35mm.
Welcome to episode 19 of Raw Footage. This episode is being released a little bit earlier than I was anticipating, but as you will hear, my film watching schedule changed somewhat, so everything got shifted up a little bit. You've got an extra episode at the end of this week rather than two next week. It's another episode where neither of the films is really in Oscar contention, but for differing reasons I was quite interested in seeing. So let's see what I thought of them.
Sugar, you light my fire, now let's get started.
There are issues with both of the trailers this week. Not in any kind of spoiler way, but the trailer for the first film today is very, very misleading. It's for the film The Grey, starring Liam Neeson, in which he plays an Alaskan oil worker who is involved in a plane crash in the snowy wilds of Alaska, and along with the survivors of this plane crash has to survive in the wilderness. So it basically looks like a man versus nature film in which Liam Neeson gets to punch wolves in the face. And honestly, that didn't appeal to me. I saw the trailer repeatedly over the last couple of months while I was watching films, and it just didn't interest me. This is a case of very bad marketing. The film company obviously cut the trailer to look like it was a film in which Liam Neeson punched wolves in the face, because they thought that the audience would want to see a film in which Liam Neeson punched wolves in the face. But that's a shame, because people like me, who aren't interested in that kind of film, and might actually enjoy the film The Grey actually is, might have completely dismissed it. But I suspect I'm in the minority of people who doesn't want to see Liam Neeson punch wolves in the face. But I had my mind changed, so I decided to go and see it, and you'll be hearing my thoughts on the film after the trailer, which is, I'll remind you, quite misleading about the tone of this film.
A job at the end of the world. I work security, protecting men from the dangers they cannot see. There's not a second goes by when I'm not thinking of you in some way.
Come on home, guys. Let's keep it moving.
Food. If we don't move and work now, we'll all freeze to death.
Somebody will find us.
They gotta know that plane went off the radar.
Nobody's gonna find us. Not here. We figure out what way is south and we start walking.
This will be one of those wild stories you tell at a party.
What is it? Get up, get up!
Don't move. Stare right back at him.
get to that tree line, we can better defend ourselves.
Here they come! Go! Go!
Hold on!
You gotta be kidding me.
We can climb down it.
If following a river, we got a better chance of finding shelter.
How are we gonna deal with this?
We take them on, one at a time.
I want to see your face. Feel your hands in mine.
Don't stop!
So you now find me standing directly outside the Odeon Cinema in Bath. I'm having to record this in a very quick place because I've got only about 10 minutes before the second film of the day. I've just come out of a film which to me seems like a bit of a bonus feature, but it won't mean anything to you. I've just seen The Grey. And this was a film I had little or no intention of actually seeing. But then I got the last issue, or last episode, of the Slash Filmcast, which is one of the film review podcasts I listen to. And they gave it a glowing review and made it sound like a quite different film from the one it was advertised as being. And I completely agree. It stars Liam Neeson in his latter day action hero persona, which is a bit of an odd progression for his career. But it seemed like a sort of man against the elements film, which didn't really appeal to me. But hearing the review on the Slash Filmcast, and now having seen the film, this is a very different film to the one that's been marketed. And that's a bit of a shame, because the marketing of this film really doesn't give the full story of what this film is about. It's much more philosophical and existential about its subject matter than you would expect. I mean, it's not just about this plane crash in Alaska which Liam Neeson survives and has to fight off these wolves. It's also about the psychological state that Liam Neeson is in. I mean, I think The Grey is a film title which has at least three different meanings, all of which apply to this film. I mean, you've got The Grey Wolf, you've got The Grey Landscape, which is covered in snow and difficult to travail. And you've also got the grey of Liam Neeson's psychology. I mean, it's clear right from the start of this film that Liam Neeson is in a very dark place. He is at the end of his rope. He feels like he has nothing left to live for. And this plane crash that happens, he survives, or tries to survive, because that's what you do. I mean, nobody is ever really ready to die, so the way it's portrayed in the film, he just isn't quite there yet. So he tries to survive and tries to fight off these wolves because he isn't quite ready to die, although indications are that he might not want to survive. And the question is constantly asked as to whether all this trouble and all this fight to survive is actually going to be worth it. It's a brilliant, brilliant performance from Liam Neeson. He's getting all the pain and the desperation of this character, and that's even before the plane crash. It's a truly superb performance, and this is a surprisingly good film. It's directed by Joe Carnahan, who made his name with a film called Narc, which has got a very good reputation, but I must admit I haven't ever seen it. The only films of his I've seen are Smoking Aces and The A-Team, both of which are relatively silly action films. So for Joe Carnahan to come up with this is very surprising, I have to be honest. This is a brilliantly directed film as well. The landscapes of snowbound Alaska are beautiful. The shot selections showing the weird situation that these people are in is excellent. I mean, the plane crash, the way the plane crash is shot is stunning. So there is some really, really good direction in this. Over recent years, there's been a tendency for art house sensibilities to find their ways into other areas. We had an art house action film in Hannah last year. We had an art house gangster film in Drive. And The Grey is nothing more than an art house horror film. It does play with the tropes of the horror genre. We have a group of people who gradually get picked off one by one. You have a malevolent and overly intelligent movie monster in this pack of wolves. And you have jump scares aplenty, I must admit, but in the context of the film as a whole, it really works. I really enjoyed this film, and I'm glad I actually made the effort to see it, because, to be honest, it really wasn't on my radar. It's impossible to understate the greatness of Liam Neeson's performance here. There's rumours that this film will be re-released in October, so Liam Neeson can have a push for next year's Oscars. And I would not be at all averse to that happening. But I'd also like to mention one of the co-stars of the film, Frank Grillo. Because I was a little bit hurried when I recorded my review of The Grey, I didn't get the chance to mention Frank Grillo's performance. He plays one of the other survivors of this plane crash, and starts out as the loudmouth, obnoxious one in the group. But gradually, and completely believably, he develops into an incredibly sympathetic character who the audience really cares about. And from this sort of loudmouth, possibly criminal character at the start, we have a much more grounded and sympathetic character at the end of the film. And it's Frank Grillo's performance which really puts that forward. So, yeah, he was very good in the film as well. If you want a film in which Liam Neeson punches wolves, then you won't really be disappointed. But if you want a deep examination of emotional turmoil and the question of whether life is worth living, then you will also go away from this film very happy. So yeah, I heartily recommend The Grey.
I am feeling adventurous tonight. Let's take things a little further, shall we?
The next film on today's podcast is Chronicle, which is a found footage film in which three teenage boys suddenly gain superpowers. And as I mentioned at the start of this podcast, there is something of an issue with the trailer for this film. Again, not in any spoiler type way, but more in a technical aspect. The audio of this trailer doesn't really help you to understand the film, because the boys' powers are so visual. However, I am still going to play the audio from the trailer to give you a little bit of an indication as to what the film is like. And if you want to see the trailer, it will of course be embedded on my website at raw-footage.co.uk. So here's the trailer for Chronicle.
You're probably going to want to get this on camera. Cha-ching, cha-ching, ain't a problem, yeah. Ba-bling, ba-bling,
I don't want to do it. Dude, I don't want to do it.
Okay, are you ready? Okay, come on, do it.
Give me a countdown.
I will, okay? I promise.
Ah!
Crap. Are we rolling? I'm going to get the gum. Pull it right out of his mouth.
Wait, why are you ready?
I got this one. Sweet.
She's just looking at it.
This is my theory, though, is that it's like a muscle.
Watch this.
Dude! Holy crap!
That's why I think we're getting stronger, you know?
She thinks it's stolen.
She has no idea.
Yes, it was the black guy this time.
Because we're working it out.
There's nothing stopping us.
Where are you going?
I'm sorry.
That's just some redneck.
What the hell is this guy's problem?
Stop! Are you crazy?
Why did you do that? What the hell is wrong with?
Was it an accident, Andrew? Andrew?
I'm worried about Andrew.
Listen to me. We can't screw around with this. It's
this
too dangerous. Andrew, it's not a game.
Andrew!
Stop this right now!
I was making that sound.
What is that?
All right, dude, we're going inside.
Steve, wait up.
Matt, look at this!
Holy...
So, after the rather hurried review I did earlier of The Grey, I'm now back in my more usual spot of Memorial Gardens, with a bit more leisure to talk about the second film of the day. I think that's the quickest double bill I've ever encountered. I mean, there was literally 10 minutes between the end of the first film, the start of the second, just enough time to have a fag and record a quick review of The Grey and then go in to the second film of the day, which is Chronicle. And the one line synopsis of Chronicle is it's a found footage superhero film. The basic premise is that three high school kids, boys, find a mysterious glowing object in a hole and it gives them extraordinary superpowers. And the film chronicles how this change in their lives affects them, and what they do with these powers. It's a very small budget film with an unknown director, unknown actors. It's directed by Josh Trank and stars Dane DeHaan. I have to say that Dane DeHaan is very, very good in this film. He's one to look out for. But, alright, before I start this review, I would like to say that I really, really enjoyed this film. But, it is deeply flawed, and also very frustrating. And it's because of the found footage genre. It fails on the two key points that you need for a found footage film. One, why was the camera still running? And two, who found the footage and who put it together? And neither of those questions are answered at all satisfactorily. I think, certainly on the second point of who found it and put it all together, it's the worst film I've ever seen in this genre for failing that test. I mean, there is a section of footage that is in the film which is literally buried. And we don't see it dug up, we don't know who dug it up. So who found it? Who put it all together? And there's all these different sources of video start coming into it. And it's annoying because for the first half to two-thirds of the film, I was actually thinking, this is a good example of the found footage genre, because there is a more or less reasonable explanation for everything to be recorded and put together. I was interested to see where it was going and who was going to end up being the person who put it all together. I mean, the basic idea is that this is the generation that films itself more than any other. I mean, we have the ability, you know, with cheap camcorders, flip cams, iPhones, webcams, we have the ability to record ourselves doing absolutely everything, and that is the point. For the first half of the film, there are two sources of video, and they are both teenagers who want to document their daily lives. I mean, one specifically says it's for her blog. So, I could get behind that. I mean, I can understand that these people do want to record themselves, they do record themselves a lot, and that's where the footage comes from. I can accept that. But in the second half of the film, it starts spreading out into all these other different sources of video, and it just doesn't work. And like I said, there's no indication who found the footage, there's no indication who put it together, and that does kind of break the movie. I mean, and I keep on doing this, I keep on giving negative reviews and focusing on the negativity of films, but I really don't want to in this case, because I did really, really enjoy this film. It's just the found footage genre is a risky place to go, and Josh Trank didn't quite pull it off. It's a really good examination of a real-life superhero. I mean, in the last couple of years, we've had films like Kick-Ass, which was my number two film of 2010, and Super, which was my number one film of 2011. And in both of those cases, ordinary people decide to become superheroes, and it examines things from that aspect. This film kind of goes the other way. It kind of says, what would happen if three teenage boys were given the powers of Superman? And the answer is, they start off pulling pranks, then they realise they've gone too far and start pulling it back, and start trying to make themselves popular. And then, I suppose what you call the lead of the film, Dane DeHaan, completely goes off the rails. And it's a natural and believable progression. And that is one of the key things about this film, is the performance of Dane DeHaan. He plays basically an abused boy. He's got a violent alcoholic father and a terminally ill mother who needs medication and they can't afford the medication, so that sends the father into a vicious circle of depression and drinking and spending all the money so he can't get the medication. And he is violent towards this kid Andrew, played by Dane DeHaan. So this is a damaged kid, and when you give somebody who is clearly damaged and clearly already starting to go off the rails, when you give him unlimited power, bad things are going to happen. And bad things do happen. And the end of the film has got some really, really nice, epic set pieces. The film is supposed to be set in Seattle, but judging by the credits, a lot of it seems to have been filmed in South Africa, which is interesting, and I'm guessing a lot cheaper than filming in America. And unfortunately, that is another aspect of this film which needs to be pointed out. It is cheap, which isn't necessarily a bad thing, but some of the CGI additions into this sort of video footage are really, really ropey. I mean, I have not seen CGI that bad since about 1992. Or maybe sort of 96, 97. But still, it's bad CGI. But there's not a massive amount of it, but it does really stick out when it's there. So unfortunately, sometimes the cheapness does come through. But the film itself and the progression of the characters is all really interesting, really believable, really exciting. And yeah, I enjoyed it a lot, but it's a really, really bad example of the found footage genre, unfortunately. You know, one day they're going to crack it, one day there's going to be a completely believable found footage film. So far there hasn't been, and the longer the search goes on, the longer this subgenre of films is going to be looked down upon. Which is a shame, because I think this film should be seen by people. A quick fact check. This film was shot in Cape Town, South Africa, and Vancouver, Canada, both of which are gaining a reputation for cheap places to make movies. And despite the fact that the final confrontation is brilliant and pretty much the equal of anything that Michael Bay could have come up with, in the early scenes, the CGI additions, you know, like baseballs floating, for example, are really poorly handled. It's a shame. One person involved in this film who I didn't mention is the screenwriter, who is Max Landis, the son of the legendary John Landis, which is kind of cool. And the actual dialogue of the film, I think, was done pretty well. It's got the right balance of young boys interacting with each other, and also some of the deeper, more emotional stuff as well. So as a dialogue writer, I think Max Landis could go places, but the structure of this film, making it a found footage film, does hurt it. I think the bottom line is, I enjoyed this film despite the fact it was a found footage film, not because of it. You really have to be careful in this subgenre, and as I mentioned in the review, I don't think anybody's quite pulled it off yet. I think the closest that anybody's come is pretty much the original, the Blair Witch Project. But other than that, nobody has truly answered those two questions. Why was the camera running, and who edited the footage together? Because of my last-minute decision to watch The Grey, my release schedule has shifted a bit. There will be one more episode next week, and probably two the week after that. We're still just in the awards zone, so to speak, and there's still a couple of films with Oscar buzz or Oscar nominated that have yet to be released. So that's going to be the focus of the next 3 episodes or so. But after that, we're going to probably have a bit of a lull in the pre-summer blockbuster period of the year. So that was Raw Footage. I've been your host, Colin Gaisley from Bath, and I'll see you the next time I come out of the cinema and into your ears. Raw Footage is an Ouroboros podcast production. Homepage can be found at raw-footage.co.uk. Comments and feedback can be sent to rawfootagepodcast@gmail.com. The intro music to this show is by Oliver Benjamin Thayer. The outro music is by Vicky, both used with permission. Idents provided by Dr. Brandy Sexy Voice of the Inside Outcast. Trailer audio is included under the Doctrine of Fair Use.